Tarlhurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End podcast extra in association with Get Reading for Friday, June 24th, 2016. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetarlhurstend.com, and back from a brief summer break, I'm delighted to welcome one Charles Watts from Get Reading. Charles, hello, how are you?
I'm very good, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. To say that the past few weeks since we spoke have been eventful might be underselling it slightly.
Yeah, it's quite a lot has gone on, both sort of centred around football and very much away from football. It's been a monumental few weeks for Reading and for the country.
Yeah, we'll swerve Brexit because I think enough people will have been dealing with that over the past few hours, and we'll be dealing with it for the next few years as well. So we'll stay clear of that and we'll stick on to the football side of things for the time being. But I wanted to start with what for me was very sadly the most significant bit of news centred around Reading Football Club over the past few weeks, and that was the sad passing of the academy head, Eamon Dolan, a figure who, to a man, I've not seen a single negative word spoke about him. Only 48, a terribly, terribly sad tale as he lost a brave battle with cancer. Charles, in particular, I wanted to ask you, because you actually spoke to Brian McDermott, one of Eamon's closest friends, and he had some touching things to say.
He did, yeah. He gave me a ring. He wanted to get his he saw the tributes have been coming in from far and wide, and he really wanted to add his own one to that. He gave me a call, and it was a really emotional interview. Really listening to him, he was fighting back tears the whole way that he was talking. He'd spent the majority of the last two or three weeks with Eamon by his side, and you know, obviously great friends, and had worked together for years. And you know, it was like I said, a really emotional interview. And I think the thing that comes across with, like you say, the tributes of Paul and Freeman from far and wide, from, you know, not just Reading, from what, completely outside the football club, from different football clubs, from up and down the country, it just says what sort of a guy Eamon was and how respected he was in football and outside of football. You know, he was a great man. I mean, I can't say that he was a friend or anything like that. I didn't know that well, but you know, I had dealings with him, I had conversations with him, and every single time I chatted with him, he had you captivated. You know, people talk about football men, and I hate that phrase really, because I think we're all football men, we all love football and everything like that, but there's always a sort of, inside football, people sort of say, oh yeah, you know, he was a football guy, and I don't normally agree with that, but I do with Eamon, because he was just one of those people that he spoke and you listened. There's a lot of people who think they're football men who talk, but they just waffle a load of rubbish and goes over your head. But with Eamon, you took in every single word. You had so much respect for the bloke, and he had me captivated when I spoke to him. And he was just that sort of person. He was just so respected. His views were spot on. He did so much for the football club, and there's just no other way of looking at it. It's just such a sad day for the club, time for the club, but especially for the family and his friends. You know, you just got to pass on your best wishes to them, because it's as sad as it is for the football club, in terms of what it is for the family as well, it's just a horrible, horrible time.
Yeah, and all our condolences do go out to Eamon's family and friends. And you talk about the legacy that he's going to leave behind, and certainly they can take some small comfort in that, because he has left such a huge mark on Reading Football Club. You know, he's worked here for 12 years, but the legacy is going to go on for years and years and years beyond that. I mean, we had the news just this week that the academy had retained its Category 1 status. I noticed Brian said that just wouldn't happen. That wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Eamon.
Yeah.
And you look at the players that have come through the ranks, from your Gylfi Sigurdssons, your Alex McCarthys. You know, look at the players that are playing out in Euro 2016 and are in the last 16. Sigurdsson, Hal Robson-Kanu, players like that that all came through under his watch. And to a man, they've all paid tribute to him. Shane Long as well. It's just been such an outpouring of emotion. And he's done more than just about any other figure. You can point to your Steve Coppells, but aside, you know, your Brian McDermott's, but aside from maybe perhaps Sir John Medeski, over the last sort of 20, 25 years, there is nobody that has made such a lasting impact and such a positive legacy on this football club. And it probably even transcends Sir John in terms of the footballing side of things.
No, I'd absolutely agree with that. I think it's 34 players, is it, who've come through from the academy to represent the first team since Eamon. And I think as well, Nick Hammond as well, the two of them, when they came in, together. This is sort of, it's just remarkable. 34 players. I mean, what an achievement that is. What a stat that is. And, you know, that's going to continue. I'm sure we're going to probably see more of them this season as well. So add to that number. And like I said, I think it was really poignant that just on the pretty much the day that unfortunately passed away, that the Caribbean status was retained. And it just sums it up. And you just kind of look at what the academy, well, that basically wasn't an academy when Eamon came here, and him and Nick Hammond sort of sat down and worked out how they wanted the club to go and what they wanted the academy to do, and Eamon was the driving force behind that, and he made it happen. And you know, he made so many players into better players, so many young lads into better players, into first team players, into established internationals, and he deserves a huge, huge amount of credit. And like you say, you know, his legacy is going to last an awful long time at this football club, and the club is absolutely worse off without him. It's incredibly sad. And you know, so yeah, he had so much more to give. 48 years old, it's just no age. He had so much more to give in football and to the club, and obviously to his family. It's incredibly sad.
Absolutely. I'm sure the club will find an appropriate way to mark it. One of the ideas being floated around social media is that the North Stand, which was due to be renamed by the club this season anyway, is appropriately renamed the Eamon Dolan Stand. And that's an idea I can certainly get behind. On that's if Eamon's family were happy with it. It's certainly one for the club to consider. But even if it's not that, I'm sure there will be some sort of lasting tribute paid to the man.
Yeah, you know, I think as well, I mean, obviously they're sort of naming tributes after him is fantastic, but I think also just what, you know, the legacy he leaves is a lasting permanent reminder of Eamon's name, and whatever it is named after, and I'm sure something will be, but you know, that sort of building that's concrete, but in terms of what he leaves behind, it sort of it's more than just concrete, isn't it? It's just, like you said, the lasting legacy of what he has done and what how the club has benefited and will continue to benefit from it. But yeah, I mean, it'd be great to see maybe the stand or the academy sort of rename the Eamon Dolan Academy, something like that. It would be a fitting tribute for such a great man.
Yeah. And there's not much more we can add to that. As I said, so many tributes. You can go and read them on both getreading.co.uk and thetylerstand.com. There's compilations of those tributes on both sites. And they only sort of touch the surface of the respect that we have. So again, condolences to Eamon's family and friends.
I think one thing I just want to add to that. I remember a conversation I had with Eamon. It was just after the under-21s cup win. And I went down to Hogwood to talk to him. And I was just there. I must be speaking to him for an hour, just standing by one of the pitches. And what really got to me, he was, you know, saying yes, it's a good achievement, but the boys have done nothing, you know. So what, they won the under-21s cup, it's nothing. They need to go on now and become first team players. That's an achievement, not winning a trophy as an under-21. And I was talking to Piers Sweeney and Aaron Cool down there as well, and you know, he was every time he was behind us as I was trying to talk to him, he was drumming it into them and like interrupting interviews, just reminding them that they haven't actually done anything in their career. You know, they're not going to be remembered for winning an under-21s cup. They now need to go on and take the next step. And I thought that was, the whole time I came away from it just thinking, it was the exact message that he was putting across there was, don't get ahead of yourself now, boys. You achieved nothing. You just, all you've done is lifted an under-21s trophy. If that's all they're going to be the highlight when you look back at the end of your career, then you're going to have, you know, you're not going to have achieved anything. And I think that's the kind of person that he was. You know, he was determined to get the very best out of them, the young players he worked with, not to let them settle for second best or thinking they've achieved something when they haven't. And it's something I'll always remember, that interview, and it summed him up.
Absolutely. You know, it's an overused phrase, but it is the end of an era. But I'm sure those that worked with Eamon will continue his hard work and do the very best they can to continue the success of the academy. And that academy is going to be increasingly important to the future, Charles, because since we last spoke and we talked at the end of May, and I kicked off the show, I think, by saying to you, you know, the season's over. It had been 3 weeks since the final game at Blackburn. I said, oh, did you have any lingering fears of Brian McDermott's job? And we both sort of discussed and said, well, no, not really. You know, sort of, they were going to do it. They probably would have done it by now. We think he's safe. I think it was about 3 days later. And Brian was duly dismissed, replaced by Yapstam and a Dutch coaching team. It's a complete revolution from top to bottom in terms of the management structure. How surprised were you? And did you back the decision just from an outside fan's point of view?
I didn't. I went on record. I said I thought he should have been, Brian should have been given the summer. I thought, I just didn't see the point in bringing him back in the first place and then not giving him a summer to rebuild. It was just, you know, you brought him back for what you achieved last time and then you didn't give him the chance to try and do that again. So I didn't back it. I went on record, but you know, it's not my decision, is it? It's people above, and they've obviously went down another route, and they've made the change, and you know, it's pretty swift. I think the way it went about wasn't great. The fact that the club had been talking to Stan before Brian was even dismissed wasn't the way to go. But it's not how Reading usually operate. You'd hope they normally operate, especially for a man who's given so much to the football club as Brian McDermott. But that's what they've done, and Yap's come in, and I was impressed with Yap at the press conference. I thought he spoke very well. He was, you know, he's a dominant-looking figure. He's going to command an awful lot of respect when he first walks into that change room. But then it all depends on, you know, how much respect he commands on the training pitch. Can he do the job? He's not really done it at senior level before, so the respect that he's going to have with the players because of what he's achieved as a player will soon diminish if they get on the training ground and he's not up to scratch. So we'll have to wait and see how that pans out. But it's an exciting move. It's a jump into the complete unknown for the football club. It is a risk. There's no doubt it's a risk at a time when the club is the last two seasons perilously close to being relegated. To make a move, to make a sort of jump into the unknown like this, it could go one or two ways. And let's hope it's not the disastrous way that maybe it could be. But so we'll have to wait and see. But my first impressions of Stan was I was impressed with him in that press conference. I thought he was, like I said, he spoke very well. He's, you know, he's very opinionated. I think he needs that as well, because he's going to be a manager in a football club where he's going to have an awful lot of people trying to get involved from one way or another around him in terms of the hierarchy at the club. And hopefully he can stand up to all that and remain his own man through it.
Do you think this is an appointment to get the best out of what we've got now, or is this an appointment as a foundation of something down the road? What sort of feeling did you get from being in that opening news conference?
I think it's probably the latter. I think, you know, it looks like the route they're going down is trying to copy the sort of Ajax model type thing and using the academy. And so I think, you know, for the now, it's not really for this season, I think it's a big risk, because they're obviously looking to the future, and you know, they've got to make sure they stay in this division and before they start reaping the benefits of a lot of the young players. So, and you look at the senior players who are leaving this summer, probably more are going to leave, and they're all going to be replaced by what looks like free transfers, mainly from Holland and some young players. So it's definitely a huge risk in terms of this season. Hopefully the club can just make sure they keep their head above water, stay out of that bottom three, and then hopefully down the line we'll see the benefits of it. So yeah, but like I said, I've said the word risk a few times now, but I generally think it is a big one.
Oh no, I 100% agree. I mean, if you go and you can download and listen to the, you know, hour and a half long podcast I did with Johnny and Dave Handbags Harris, or the main edition of the show that's up and available to download now, and we talked in detail about it, and it's just such a period of uncertainty for the football club. It was interesting as well to see at the top table, you really got an idea of the complete shift in power, because on the one hand you had Sir John Badesky openly saying, well, this wasn't my decision, I didn't agree with it. And on the other hand, you had a very silent, he said a couple of words, but a pretty much silent owner in Tiger on the other side.
Yeah, he didn't say much at all, Tiger. And it was quite surprising that as well, because I've spoken to Tiger before in Thailand, and he spoke pretty good English. But the way he was talking at the press conference was like he didn't really understand too much about it, which I was quite surprised. And then, you know, I asked him a fair few questions about it. Are you going to sell the club? Do you want to sell the club? That's what we're hearing. And he didn't really answer it at all. And it's, you know, it was a strange one. What I understand from Tiger, though, which possibly is a good thing, is that he has certainly become a lot more hands-on and is sort of taking control of the football side of things at the football club. You know, whereas last season, I think it was pretty much the Ties advisors who were running things. Like Pyro was a huge factor in running things and signing players and doing everything on their behalf. But I think the whispers I'm getting that is changing, or has changed over the summer, and maybe a disappointing result to last season, a disappointing managerial appointment in Brian McDermott, that the Ties have certainly, Tiger has decided that they need to start being more involved on the ground. And obviously we saw Tiger at the press conference. He's been at a few games towards the end of last season. He seems to be spending an awful lot more time here. And it seems like he is beginning to now be the sort of head of this, I hate the word, football committee, which is now running Reading.
Yeah, I mean, it's all tied up in, and we'll come on to the transfer rumours both in and out very shortly. But I mean, this is a central question behind, before we look at any rumours, is, I mean, what sort of state do you think the club's in financially? Because there's been a lot of rumours and whispers and fears and various sort of spin put out from both sides about the state of the owners, how much money they've got, how much they're willing to spend. Are they here to asset strip? Are they here to just develop Royal Elm Park? You're close to the club than many. What sort of feelings do you get about the overall financial health of the football club?
Well, it's not great. It's hard for me to talk about that because in terms of the actual financial state, they're obviously, you know, spending a fair amount of money. You just look at the wage bill and everything like that. But in terms of how cash rich they are, how much money they're going to be spending, that we're going to see them spend, I'm not expecting them to see much at all. It's obviously one free transfer has arrived already. We're about to see a second free transfer arrive, and I think we're going to see plenty more of those sort of signings this summer. There's not going to be much money spent. And I saw something today quite interesting. In it's coming from Holland, and you've got a lot of this you've got to pick up from sort of Holland or Thailand media over there, because it seems like the new regime, they're talking in their own they're all talking to their own media but barely talking to us over here. And I saw something there saying that the budget had gone from 15 million to 6 million or something this year, and you know, it's those sort of numbers you hear. It just suggests there's an awful, you know, there's not much money being spent. Look at the training ground. I mean, work's completely stopped there, and I'm not expecting it really to start anytime soon, and certainly not until possibly they seal a sale for Hogwood, and then we may see more work. You know, bear would say, you know, there's not much money floating around, and it's not great. Fans won't like to hear that. They want to see some money being spent, but unfortunately, I don't think we're going to.
I mean, that's the worrying thing for me, the fact that the work on the training ground seems to have ground to a halt a bit. And there are stories going round about all the money's tied up in Royal Elm Park and things like that. Do you get the vibe? I suppose, got to be careful what you say here, but do you get the vibe that they are here simply for the property deal and their other interests, and the football club's just an annoying side project? Or do you get the feeling they do actually genuinely care about the football club, but they're just doing it in a responsible way?
I think they do care about the football club, but you've got to ask the question, would they be here if there wasn't other interests? You know, would they be here if it was just, if Royal Elm Park wasn't on the table? And you've got to say, for me, I don't think they would be. And that's not a criticism of them. I mean, they're business people and they've got to look at the bigger picture, and that's where they probably see where the money's going to come from, is the possible development they can get. And I'm sure that's how they were tempted over here by Sir John or Nigel Howe, you know, people who were trying to sell the club. I'm sure they were pointing out exactly what the possibilities were outside of football as well with Reading. So I don't look at that as a massive criticism, and that you've got to look at it and think they have come in and they've stopped the club from going into administration. You know, if it wasn't for them, the picture could look an awful lot more messy. So I think you've got to sort of level things up by saying that. But I mean, the Hogwood thing is the Bearwood thing is a shame. I think that's going to be a long, slow process. I think what you might start to see eventually is more of a Hogwood sort of thing taking shape at Bearwood. You know, obviously we've seen the lavish plans, brilliant buildings, everything like that. But I think what you might see is eventually work at starting again on the pitches and things like that, and then possibly temporary buildings built all around that, which obviously is very different to what we were sold and what we've seen in the plans. But I think until maybe Hogwarts set is sold and money comes in from that, then Bearwood will start taking shape in more permanent structure. But I think it's going to be a fairly long process.
Yeah, I think the one reassuring thing for me on the training ground side of things is that if the club has been given Category 1 status again, they do have to make certain promises and assurances. Because I seem to remember at the time it was originally given out, it was the fact that, you know, they had to have a certain amount of accommodation and training facilities and things like that. So presumably they wouldn't have been able to keep that if the whole training ground idea had been scrapped. So I suppose, reading between the lines, that is one nice point to come out of it.
Yeah, I certainly don't think it's been scrapped, but I think it's just going to be, it's a long process. We're going to see it a lot. It's not going to be 2 years' time that lavish new training ground that we've all seen pictures for is going to be up and operational. It's, I think, far from the case. And also, an awful lot of work has been done at Hogwood as well. Like, Hogwood is completely different just in the last couple of years, and far more work has been done at Hogwood than there has been done at Bearwood. And so, you know, Hogwood's a vastly improved facility, albeit, again, with temporary accommodation, temporary buildings all over the place there. But an awful lot of work has been done there in the last sort of 6 months to a year, possibly because of that you know, retaining the category one status, and the fact that they knew the move to Bearwood wasn't going to be happening so quickly, that they had to ensure that work was done at Hogwood to make sure that that category one status was retained in the process.
Well, absolutely, and let's face it, it's been a pitch that's overseen two championship wins and a very successful academy, as we've just mentioned. So if it ain't broke, there's no immediate rush to fix it, I guess.
Yeah.
But we talked about the investment then. You mentioned a couple of free transfers and the transfer business that the club will be doing this summer. They have made two signings, Danzel Gravenberch, or Daniel Gravenbach, as I called him the other week, and I'll stick to. And it looks today... as if Joey van der Berg will join on a free transfer as well. I mean, what do we know about these type of players?
Well, not too much, to be honest. I mean, Joey van der Berg, great name that, whatever happens, I think it's a good name, he's kind of, we've been in Holland throughout his career. He's a temperamental character by the sounds of it, loves a red card, loves a yellow card. I think he holds a record of like, the worst disciplinary in Holland, which is quite an achievement. It was more of an attacking player as during his younger years, and as he's got towards the 30s, he is sort of, I think, now seen more of a sort of deep line playmaker, pretty much an Oliver Norwood by the sort of position by the sounds of it. What that means for Ollie, we'll have to wait and see. but that's about all I know. I mean, like I said, temperamental. I saw someone who watches him a lot over there saying that he's, if when the chips are down, he's one of the first players whose head normally drops, which isn't a good sign. But he is talented, you know, he's a bit of a mercurial figure, can pull out a 30-yarder into the top corner, or a fantastic assist as well. So I think we're going to have to wait and see to see exactly what he brings to the side. I mean, Gravenberch really don't know much about at all. He's playing in the second division over there, which isn't at the highest standard, but obviously came through the ranks at Ajax, so had a good football education, and touch wood, that Reading can get the best out of him. I mean, you look at it, that's certainly a... They've got Brian Tevreden written all over him. I mean, Yapstam's worked with Joey before. I think PC Swole, the club's called, when Yap was an assistant there and Joey was playing for him. So Yap knows all about him. Obviously thinks he's good enough to make the jump over to England and that he can bring something to the side. So we'll have to trust Yap on that. He's a manager and hopefully he knows the player better than all of us and he knows what he can bring. And Tevreden obviously knows Gravenberch well, and he thinks he can do the job in England. So, like I said, there's a whole new world here. We're having to trust different people to make these signings. We're going to have to go with them, and hopefully they're going to prove to be right and they're going to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a reason these players are free transfers, that no one's heard of them, let's face it. But at the same time,
a lot of clubs in Holland wanted Joey. You know, Reading have won the race to get him. You know, FC 20, people like that who were champions not long ago, wanted him, and Reading won it. So it's not like he was not wanted or anything like that. I think he decided to run his contract down at Herve. He wanted at 30 to make maybe one last big move, and he's got one to England, which I'm sure he'd be delighted with. But I think he's a good player. He's very well known over in Holland, so maybe for the wrong reasons and that disciplinary record. But he's not maybe Gravenberch has come under the radar a little bit, but I think Joey van den Berg is certainly a player that a lot of people are aware of over in Holland, and Reading have probably done fairly well to sign him because there were plenty of others wanted him.
Yeah, but this is what I mean. I mean, they're free transfers because, you know, they have either got points to prove or something's gone wrong. You know, there's a reason that we're not buying proven £5 to £10 million players, and it's the risk we've got to take. But the positive side to this is that we are slowly getting back to that way of signing players with a point to prove, rather than players that are on their way down or sort of having a temporary move. You know, I've been vocal on this show and others. I want to get back to that way. I want to see players who like to make their name at Reading rather than Reading's just a stop on the way, or, you know, they're on loan. And it's nice to see that, you know, we've got a little bit of identity back rather than just going for players that, you know, might have a bit of a name elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that period is certainly over. We're not going to be seeing those big wages, big players coming over anymore. And you've got to say that period failed, didn't it? From the moment it started, it failed. It almost brought the club to its knees. So, I think we're all happy that slowly that is sort of being moved away from. I think we're going to see the last few players of that era probably move on this summer and completely start afresh with a new management team, a new team above that management team, and certainly a new team of players on the pitch. So, it's all change at a Madstad, whether whether it's a successful change, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, only time will tell. But are there any other names in the frame that you've heard that we could be seeing over the next couple of weeks?
I think the Anthony Cora one's certainly one to look out on the striker. Obviously, there's other clubs wanting him, and you sort of look at it and think, how are Reading going to beat Marseille to a player? But certainly looking at reports in France, I don't think it's nailed on that he's going to Marseille. And I think there's certainly seems to be talk over there that they think that Reading might be able to even offer more than Marseille, which you sort of look at it and think, how is that possible? But that, you know, it's not a link that has just come about. This is one that's been going on for a while. I think that's certainly one to look out to look for. And you know, they desperately need a striker this summer. And if they could get him, then you've got to say that would be an exciting one. You know, he's 23. The big club's interested in him. He's that age where he's got to really make his mark. Now, I think to last season he averaged about one in every three games, which I think anyone would take that at Reading right now, a striker you're averaging one goal every three games. So I think that's one to really look out for in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and we're keeping, obviously, an eye at getreading.co.uk and at thetitlesend.com for more of those transfer rumours as they come in. But let's talk about the outside of things then. We already know that the players that left, we talked about them last time, the Hal Robson Canoes, the Simon Coxes of this world, that have now left the football club. A couple of big names being talked about. Oliver Norwood, we sort of hinted at again on the last show, but the two that have come in the last sort of few days, one completely out of left field in Aaron Tischbola, and the other sort of a more expected departure rumour is Danny Williams. How close are either of those two to leaving the football club?
Well, the Aaron one's really strange. You know, it's been, I think, getting such mixed messages. There was where they've come from, I'm not sure, in terms of like the whole Norwich thing and deal agreed. Everyone I spoke to at Reading was telling me that just was not the case, and it never at any stage had a deal been agreed with Norwich. And it was quite strange that one came out, and especially it was a day after that, again, I'd been told categorically by Reading that they were going to fight hard to keep him, and then suddenly a report came out that they'd agreed a $2 million fee, which was pretty much the fee that was being talked about anyway. Reading, to me, and I've seen from Anthony at the Chronicle as well, who's obviously been speaking to people, said the same thing, that it's very much that no, this isn't, it's not right, the story's not right. And I really hope that they stick to that, because I think it'd be a massive loss if Tish went. You know, Danny Williams, we've all been expecting to leave this summer anyway. It's not going to, no one's going to be surprised to see him go. And I think it'd be best if he did go. He's obviously got 1 year left on his contract. He's not going to sign a new one. He's biggest earner at the club, and so they may as well try and get some money out of him now and not pay his wages for the final year. And Tish is ready, as long as he's injuries free, he's ready to step into that role. Now, we saw, even just in a few appearances last season, that the guy's quality, there's no doubt about that. And I really hope, with 3 years left on his contract, that Reading do their utmost to keep him, even if bids come in for him. Because sell Danny Williams, you know, sell Ollie Norwood if you have to, he's got a year left in his contract if he's not going to sign it. But Tish should be, if the club really are serious about, you know, building and working with youth, and you know, Tish should be, the midfield should be built around him. He's got 3 years left on his contract. There's no position, they don't need to sell him. I can't imagine Tish would absolutely throw his toys out of the pram if they rejected a move, barring to, you know, the Premier League or something like that. You know, they're in no position to sell him. If they want to make money, then make money selling Williams, make money selling Norwood. But for me, Tish, unless they get a fantastic offer, I mean, $2 million for me, it's just laughable. You're looking at, I think Leicester are trying to get $10 million out of Liverpool for that left back who's never played in the Premier League before and never played a first team appearance for him, really.
Blackman got $3.5 million for him with 6 months left on his contract.
Yeah, exactly, and he'd only scored, you know, this season, basically. So that, talking about a player that Tish, even if he's only made 16 first team appearances, the guy has got it. You can see he's got it. He's quality. And to sell him with 3 years left in his contract for $2 million would be absolutely laughable, in my opinion. And so, yeah, unless they got something triple that, I just don't see why they need to sell him. Get money from elsewhere if they need to raise funds to give Yapstam some money to spend. But don't sell the crown jewel, really, certainly in the last year, in terms of young players who have come through, and that's Tish. Because just from a business sense, if he sticks around for another season and plays, you know, 30, 40 games next season, his value is going to skyrocket, because you know he's going to put in good performances, and he's still going to have 2 years left on his contract. So it just makes absolutely no sense to sell him for what is a pittance right now.
Yeah, there's only two reasons to sell him in my book. Either one, the player is absolutely just beyond, got his mind set on a move and he's just not hearing any of it. And if that's the case and he's become such a bad sort of player to have around the training ground, then yeah, you listen to offers. Or like you said, they get a massive offer, you know, like when they got you know, seven odd million offered for Gylfi just after he had signed a new deal. Sometimes, you know, you have to accept the realities and you have to take a good deal. But I don't think either of those are the case here. I especially don't think Tishbola, you know, is kicking up a stink. He always seems a very level-headed person.
But I'd be very surprised if he was. I would be very, very surprised. I mean, I can't say for definite that he wouldn't.
Oh, no.
But I would be really surprised if he was kicking up a real fuss. I've just, you know, I speak to Tish plenty of times, and I do not think he would do that.
Yeah, no, I very much agree. But those are the only two scenarios that make any sort of sense for Reading to sell. Or there is the very uncomfortable third scenario that they are, that the Tyones are so strapped for cash that they will have to take a discount for him. And if that is the case, then we've got a lot more to worry about than
just selling
Tish. Indeed. So those are a couple. Any other names? I mean,
Chris Gunter has been linked. Anthony, there was an interesting story come out yesterday that he's got a £1 million release clause and that a few clubs are looking at activating that this summer. Middlesbrough, Swansea. Million. Yeah, but I suppose you look at it, he's only got a year left in his contract, isn't he? And if he hadn't signed that new deal whenever it was, then he would have been leaving for free this summer. So maybe the club were like, well, look, just you can have another year and maybe we can get some money out of you if you do go in the summer. So, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's better than losing one on a free. True. But again, he's an international player, an international right back who's having a good Euros. And it's weakening the side, isn't it? All these departures, you're looking at international players leaving. I think we all know it's going to be a very new looking Reading side, but there's some players that I would keep, and I think Gunter's a decent defender and I would keep him, but if he's got a release clause then they haven't got a leg to stand on if someone hits it, unless he does a Jamie Vardy and plays other clubs like a fiddle to earn himself a massive new deal.
How cynical of you, Joe. I thought you were an Arsenal fan.
Him and his agent a massive new deal, then so be it. But no, it's like I said, if he has got that release clause, I don't know if he has, then they haven't really got a leg to stand on. If someone comes in and matches it, then you imagine Chris will be off, especially if it's a Premier League club that's calling.
Yeah, any more whispers around Jake Cooper? Because there were a lot of sort of buzz around the end of the season about Bournemouth and teams like that looking.
Yeah, I've heard nothing about Jake at all. And, you know, I think, like I said, he's got a decent contract. He's a young player. And, you know, I bet he's pretty excited about the prospect of working with Yapstam. So unless a decent offer came in for him, I can't imagine. Given that Ferdinand's gone, I know they've got Gravenberch in, but they're not exactly blessed with centre-backs at the moment. So hopefully he'll stay. And you've got to think that under Yapstam, he could really come on this season.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, a young player that you'd want to be trying to build around. I noticed there were rumours linking Reading with a loan move for Tyler Blackett. And you just, you know, the young Man United defender. And you're just thinking, well, we don't want to start going down this route again of giving young players from other clubs. The only one it's ever worked for, really, has been Ryan Bertrand.
Yeah.
And that was because Ryan Bertrand was a tested, proven fullback, and Reading got a great year out of him.
Yeah, but you look at Blackett, I mean, Blackett, disastrous spell at Celtic, and there's nothing to suggest that he's going to come here and really massively improve the team for a year. And
do you just think that's the Stan Man United defender connections?
Possibly, yeah. But I would steer well clear of that one. I think the whole loan project failed last year, unless you're going to get someone who's going to definitely come in and improve the team. Like you said, someone that you know, like Bertrand, who's a quality player, would come in and do that. But with Blackett, you've got to say it'd be a big punt. And I'd just steer well clear of that one.
Yeah, and with Reading having players like Dom Higham and Rob Dickey, who both did well out on loan in the past couple of years as well, they're sort of getting ready to join the first team ranks as well. So again, why aren't you giving your own sort of 20-21 year olds games?
Exactly.
So we'll wait to see how that one pans out. But that just about wraps up sort of the transfer side of things. Anything else over the past few weeks caught your eye in the world of Reading Football Club, Charles?
Not really. I've, to be honest, when I was off, I literally stayed well away from it. I
do not blame you.
Unfortunately, obviously, there was the whole manager thing going on, so I kind of had to try and keep somewhat my ear to the ground on it all, but I tried to do my very best to stay well away from it. And I'm just looking forward to it all starting again. I know it's a whole leap into the unknown now, but I am looking forward to starting.
Had you already booked your trip to Slovenia?
No, fortunately, I had not already booked my trip to Slovenia. I'm very disappointed, though, this happened a little bit later in the summer, that we didn't get a bit of a tour to Amsterdam, which I'm very hopeful that next year we might see a bit of a trip to Holland somewhat. And who knows, maybe a glamour friendly in the Amsterdam arena. And I'm sure there'd be an awful lot of people who'd be up for making that short little flight
I get
into
that.
Europe. Although you'll have to get your visa sorted, I'm sure, for that now, and to get over to Holland or whatever. But
indeed, indeed. Well, before I let you go, then, briefly touch on the Euros. Obviously, Reading players have had a good impact. I said they're all still in it, going into the last 16. Who's your money on to win the whole thing? How have you felt about England and Wales and
I don't think the other teams?
Barring
the second half for England, I thought England played well. I thought in the first half against Slovakia they played well. If we'd have gone in 2-0 up, I think everyone would say what a great half of football that was. We dominated possession, kept the ball well, created plenty of chances. But the problem was we just didn't stick the ball in the net. And that's been a problem in all three games, really. We've actually dominated all three games. I think we have more shots than anyone else in the whole competition, which is, for England, is remarkable, really. But the thing that we all thought was going to be our strong point going into the tournament was our sort of striking department. And unfortunately, we've not scored enough goals. They keep falling in blue and Adam Lallana, unfortunately, most of the chances. He's not exactly blessed with the best finishing in the world. And there's an awful lot of criticism coming his way, but I'm not kind of buying into that at the moment. I think we've played well. And barring that stupid last-minute goal against Russia, we'd have topped the group. And, you know, we should have comfortably beaten Slovakia. And someone could have easily got a pasting in those three games. Unfortunately,
yeah,
it didn't.
Roy Hodgson said as much as well. He said he kind of expects someone's going to get hiding soon.
But I think that's going to be harder to do now because we're going to be playing the tough teams. You sort of look at the path we're going to have to go through, and unless we give Iceland a bit of a tonking, which, as an England fan, I'm just fully expecting it to be an absolute horror show and a grind, hopefully just sneak through somehow, because everyone's going to expect us to breeze past them, which it's just not going to happen.
A bit like Ecuador in 2006?
Yeah, England don't do that. And so, we're certainly not going to give someone like France or Spain are pasting in the roots of the finals. I think that's gone now, but I still think there's no one to fear for us. I still think we can cause plenty of problems. We're keeping the ball well, we're passing the ball well, we just got to take our chances. And you know, hopefully Harry Kane will come back into the side and for this.
Whoa, you advocating a Tottenham player come back?
I think Harry Kane's a fantastic player. I think he's a brilliant finisher. I think I think he should be starting. And I think I see Jamie Vardy much more as an impact substitute than a player starting. No, that's not me saying that because of his decision to reject Arsenal. I fully respect his decision. It shows it's good for football, I suppose. But I still see him more as an impact. I think he came on against Wales and did the job. And
more Lafondre then.
I see him more that because his strength is getting in behind, and with teams are playing so deep ahead of us now that it's tough for him. He did it once against Slovakia, didn't he? But he didn't take the chance. But other than that, he didn't really get sick. I honestly thought he'd been subbed in the second half until the full time whistle went, and I saw he was still on the pitch. I genuinely thought he'd been subbed. I just didn't know he was still playing. And I'd much rather Kane be there to sort of sniff one out if a ball box breaks to him in the box. And so I'd certainly start with him. But yeah, I'm not joining in the whole criticism of England. I think they've done all right. I think they've been encouraging sides. And I still think we've got a chance of winning it. But
yeah, well, I wish we'd been in Wales half of the draw. That seems a really juicy half.
Although they're going to defeat Croatia, and Croatia have been the best team in the tournament so far, in my view. And, they're not going to be easy to beat at all. And I actually think it's going to be, right now, I think it's going to be a Croatia-France final.
Who do you think is going to win the battle of the Reading players then, Northern Ireland or Wales?
You've got to say Wales just because they've got the X factor, haven't they? They've got Bale, they've got Ramsey. And as good as team spirit in Northern Ireland have got, I think it's going to be a tight British battle, isn't it? And you just sense that someone's going to do something brilliant to win it, and it will be someone from Wales doing that rather than someone from
Northern Ireland. It's going to take a special Ollie Norwood set piece, I feel.
Well, hopefully so. I mean, yeah, you just think. I mean, Northern Ireland done fantastically well to get through, but they have lost two of their games, haven't they? They beat Ukraine, played well in that one, but they lost the other two games. And you know, Wales have shown. I thought they were fantastic against a dreadful Russia side, but I think when you've got Ramsey's been brilliant in this tournament. I think, and Bale's obviously scored the goals as well. And you sort of put those two together, and you just think that will just about shade things for them. But I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a great game, and it's great for Reading fans as well to have so much interest in this one. And obviously, you've got Gylfi to watch over at Iceland, and Stephen Quinn's still in it with Ireland as well. So plenty of interest. It's good to see so many Reading players through to the latter stages
Absolutely. Of
the tournament.
And in the case of Oliver Norwood, if he does want to put in a couple of magical free kicks, put a couple of magical million on his price tag, I would not be against that either. But anyway, so what's your final England prediction then? Where do you think they're going to get to?
I think they'll get knocked out by France in the quarterfinal.
Okay, I think I'm probably with you there. But that's my cynical Reading fan.
But I would not be surprised to see us beat them as well. You know, I think there's no one to be fearful of this tournament. I haven't seen anything to make me fearful of France either. But you just think home advantage that they might just edge it. But
yeah, they
wouldn't be at all surprised to see us put knock them out either.
Fingers crossed. Anyway, Charles, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Hopefully we'll chat again in a few weeks' time. We've got a few more signings and the pre-season training's well underway. But in the meantime...
Well, games start soon, don't they?
I know, yeah.
It's unbelievable. I mean, isn't it one next Saturday? Is it Bournemouth Wood next Saturday or is it Saturday after?
Might be the one after.
Is it the one after? I can't...
I presume they're back in pre-season training on Monday.
Some of them, a lot of the players have been back already. More of the younger players and stuff. But obviously you're going to start seeing the more senior players head back, I think, probably next week, yeah. And obviously the internationals will have a little bit more time off, but they're all it's all going to be starting up again before we know it.
Yeah, where's my summer gone? But you can follow Charles on Twitter @Charles_Watson. Obviously, keep tuned to getreading.co.uk for all of the latest news there, and also plenty of fan opinion and analysis over on thecarlessend.com. And it's not just the Euros going on, our home kit World Cup is heating up as well. If you've been following that over the summer, some nice classic designs sneaking their way through that tournament, so head over there for that, and I'm sure we'll have quite a few more opinion pieces and tactical previews as we get more players to tactically preview, because it's quite difficult to do a lot of previews at the moment given the uncertainty. But stay tuned for us to the website for that. And in terms of this podcast, I'll hopefully be back with a main edition of the show again probably in 2 or 3 weeks time, unless something sensational happens. But keep an eye, just if you subscribe to the iTunes feed, of course you'll get it as soon as the episode is released. But Charles, thanks very much for joining me, and enjoy the rest of the summer.
Yeah, you too, Dan. Speak to you soon, mate.
Take care, buddy. Ta-da.
Bye.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@TheTarlhurstEnd
and facebook.com/TheTarlhurstEnd.